Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger. Fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, so hopefully I've developed a reputation for being honest with all of you. I try to anyway. I hope that's how I'm thought of by those who listen to Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. So let me be completely honest off the top of today's program. My beginning topic is probably not all that important, but I thought it was kind of interesting. And so hopefully we can kind of get something out of this. The genesis of all of this is, as I said before, probably a bit silly. So Fox Sports, their college football Twitter account, recently tweeted out a picture. And it's a big graphic, and the question on the graphic is, who's the best player ever to wear number one? And there are like eight pictures on this graphic. I see Anthony Carter, the former Michigan receiver dating back to the 80s. I see Kyler Murray, former Oklahoma quarterback. There's Percy Harvin. You got Justin Fields. You got Larry Fitzgerald. You got probably a few other guys I can't even hardly recognize. But you got like eight guys on here to, you know, battling to be the best ever to wear number one, according to Fox Sports. Once again, as I said before, this is not like an official designation or anything like that. It's just a debate. But the thought that I had upon looking at this, and admittedly, I'm probably a bit of a homer on this one. Admittedly, I'm seeing this through red and black colored glasses. But my first thought here is, can Sony Michel not even get on the graphic? And by the way, I'm not saying to you that Sony Michel ought to be considered the greatest number one of all time or the greatest anything of all time. But if you're going to talk about greats to have worn the number one and you're going to give me eight photos on a Twitter graphic, could you not at least give some consideration to a Sony Michel? I mean, it's not as if he had an undistinguished career. When you go back to the University of Georgia, he's third all time in rushing yards of the program. By the way, there are a lot of very good running backs who played at Georgia, but he's ahead of names like Garrison Hurst, who was among Heisman finalists in 1992, Todd Gurley, who's gone on to be kind of an NFL great. Michelle's name is ahead of them on the all-time list there on that front. He and Nick Chubb obviously made one of the most prolific tandems of running backs in NCAA history, to say nothing of the fact that the crowning achievement of Michelle's career came in a historic venue like the Rose Bowl against a big-time opponent like Oklahoma. Once again, you know, you can certainly argue lots of other players being the best number one of all time, and for all I know, there are other players who are more deserving of that designation, unofficial as it is, than Sony Michel. But if you're giving me eight number ones, at that point in time, if we're talking about two-thirds of a dozen, then maybe Sony Michel ought to at least get some consideration there. And this is where, like, the sort of the silly turns a bit serious just for a moment. Because I do think it's important as time passes. And by the way, more and more time has passed since the end of that 2017 season, since that Rose Bowl that we all love. You know, we're kind of adding some – every day we add more and more distance between that moment. It's probably appropriate for us to never forget those memories and make sure that amongst Georgia fans, whether it be through media products like this or just fans gathering around a tailgate, whenever it is we're allowed to do that kind of thing again, it's important that we keep telling those stories. Remember that time back in Pasadena? Remember how great Sony Michel was there that day, so that these moments don't get lost to time and that underrated performances don't become forgotten performance. I think that's really important, and it kind of coincides with something we've been doing here at Dog Nation as of late, where we've been looking at the top moments thus far in the Kirby Smart era, bracket style, and people have been voting for them. And Connor Riley, the guy that sort of got all that going, one of the things that he and I have talked about off the air a bit about that is that the challenge for a bracket style competition like that is that the Michelle moment in the Rose Bowl is so significant for Georgia fans, it's almost hard to argue anything but that in terms of being the all-time great moment. I think I've even addressed that here on our program before, of course, the last couple of weeks as well. But when you see Michelle nationally maybe not remembered as fondly as Georgia fans remember him, then all of a sudden Dog Nation doing its part to kind of remind folks about that 2017 Rose Bowl moment, the walk-off touchdown that Sony Michel scored, maybe there's some value in all of that after the fact. Maybe it is a good thing that we're going back and kind of talking about, you know, some of that kind of stuff. Because, I mean, let's face it, what he and his partner in crime back in the time, Nick Chubb, were famous for doing, listen, the way in which they worked together to build the Georgia offense, culminating in an SEC championship or trip to the college football playoff in 2017, you cannot overstate how valuable it was. In fact, Kirby Smart has kind of put this in his own words in the past about just how important, just how valuable Chubb and the guy we're talking about right now, Sonny Michel, were for UGA. And the fact that what they brought to Georgia is really something that you can't even put a price tag on. Here's Kirby Smart at the end of the Michelle Chubb careers, giving them credit for their rightfully so lofty plays in UGA football history.
I mean, those guys give sweat and blood for this university, man. They play on special teams. They do everything right. What they've done for this university, we can never repay them for what they've done for this university, because the fact they come back and they give so much, they care about it. They did it not for themselves. They did it for everybody else on the team. And I think that's lost in college football a lot of times. You know, you don't see guys do that. It just shows how much they care.
Certainly they were selfless with the way they went about their business at UGA, and certainly both in terms of how they handled themselves off the field, how they performed on the field. Michelle, the guy we're talking about today, Chubb, the guy we've talked about plenty and we'll talk about again, they deserve a lot of credit for that. And by the way, even after what was unfortunately a sad memory at the very end of the career for Sonny Michel, that lost Alabama in the national championship game, even at that time, Michelle was wise enough to kind of know that beyond all of that, there would be some value in what he had helped brought to Georgia. That great success that they enjoyed that year was going to be a foundation that future Georgia teams were going to be built on. In fact, here is what Sonny Michel said going back to that, you know, January moment at the end of the national championship game.
We try to set the standard high so our younger guys can know, you know, where to take it from here. We fell short today, and I think guys that's coming back understand what it's going to take plus more to get back here.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think they became the measuring stick for how all future Georgia teams will be measured, including the one here in 2020. One final point on all of this, the appreciation of Sonny Michel, whether it be starting for kind of a silly reason, being ignored on a Fox Sports tweet, whatever else, it's still kind of nice to kind of look back on one of the guys that was so significant to the history thus far of Kirby Smart as Georgia coach. And we were lucky enough to have Sonny Michel here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger a couple of years ago. It was before our Dog Nation Appreciation event. And it was nice at the time to know from Sonny, who, by the way, has gone on to great things in the NFL. He's won a Super Bowl with the Patriots, and he's working on a pretty good career there, all things being equal. It was kind of nice to know as he was getting ready to embark on that part of his football journey that certainly he had great appreciations himself for what he was able to do at Georgia, maybe most prominent of anything, being a part of an unbelievable community of UGA fans. And he really felt connected to that. He told us that on our show at the time, and since we're talking about him today, it seems probably appropriate to let him tell you this.
Just overall, it's mind-blowing just to think how special Dog Nation fans are. And now that I'm an alumni and I'm a part of that now, I can say that I'm a fan now. I can watch Georgia football. But, I mean, just as a player and, you know, knowing going into games that we're going to have the maximum support possible from Dog Nation was the best experience. Whether we was traveling to the West Coast or staying in the East Coast, no matter where we went, Dog Nation was there. Whether it was an open practice or a G-Day game, it was packed out. Dog Nation would be a full effect supporting us. And I don't think there's no place in the country like that that's consistent like Dog Nation.
Listen, I think that's beautifully said by Sonny Michel, and it may be true that the Nation, Fox Sports, people like that, maybe they don't remember the Michel career as fondly as we do, but Georgia fans will help keep that memory alive for a long time to come. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Kroger. Good to have you with us. Radio on 960 The Ref, podcast form. Of course, we are on video still as well, Facebook and YouTube each and every morning at 10 a.m., and we appreciate you being a part of that. It's really great to know that I can maintain my line of communication with all of you, even though there's a bunch of weirdness going on in the world. Just nice to know that we can get together here, and also appreciate Kroger making it all possible. You know, they're your one-stop hop shop for everything to get ready for Easter, including Kroger spiral sliced ham, honey, or brown sugar. It's just $1.79 per pound when you use your card. Plus, you can pick up your sides and dessert. And don't forget Kroger standing rib roast, just $6.99 per pound there as well, also when you use your card. So you're getting ready for Easter, that big meal. Maybe it's a smaller gathering this year than it has been in the past, but nonetheless, Kroger will still help you get ready for all of that. And speaking of getting ready, even in the midst of the coronavirus shutdown here, Georgia's still got a season it's got to get ready for, and at least in some form or fashion, we believe. And Kirby Smart this week did talk about kind of how they're handling that right now, how they're preparing for a season without the benefit of being together. No spring practice, no face-to-face meetings here right now, yet seemingly trying to make the best of the situation. Smart addressed a lot of that when he spoke to reporters on Tuesday, including explaining why the challenge of all this was maybe so significant for Georgia, the timing of when it happened because of the fact that Georgia hadn't yet begun its spring practice, hadn't started its spring practice yet, and because guys were kind of scattered all over the place, made that a lot for Georgia to deal with. Here's what Smart said about that this week.
First of all, it starts back to spring break. I mean, we were on spring break, and that's probably been one of the toughest transitions for us. As you can imagine, a lot of schools were in session when this happened, and they were able to have a team meeting. They were able to have, you know, a little exit strategy. We were all over the place. It's been hard because we've had to call each player individually. We have ways to connect with them, obviously through Zoom and FaceTime, but not having that exit meeting to say, okay, this is where we're headed from this point, that was probably the toughest thing.
And once again, I realize the audio on that's not quite what we're used to here on our program, but just given the nature of the conference call this week, I thought it was more important for you to hear what Smart had to say than it was to present, in this case, perfect audio. So we appreciate your patience on that. I think that Smart's right. Just given the fact they weren't able to kind of start off the spring year the way they typically would used to, there's a lot to deal with there. There's some inconvenience associated with that, but seemingly Georgia's making the best of the situation, including utilizing the video conference technology that's out there right now to get these coaches together in a meeting situation, getting them talking about some of the preseason preparations. When you hear Smart discuss the way in which they're leaning on that technology, you sort of get the sense that at least in one regard, it's kind of business as usual. Here's more from Smart.
And does the coaching staff have daily Zoom meetings? Yes. We're on a Zoom meeting right now with offense, defense, special teams all separate. So we have daily Zoom meetings as a staff, and those are used to do exactly what we would be doing if we were in spring ball. So there are more information meetings, install meetings, going through those, but those are staff meetings only.
So listen, I think that's good to know from Georgia's standpoint. They're kind of getting ready, getting all of this done. And, you know, obviously the one thing you know about Kirby Smart is if there's anything that can be done to prepare, Smart's going to make sure he and his staff and his players are doing that. And it certainly seems like that is ongoing right now. We've got a busy edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger here today on the show. Let me tell you about a couple of things that are coming up in just a moment. I'm going to talk to Mike Griffith. And one of the things I'll spend a good bit of time talking to Mike about is yesterday, live on the Dog Nation YouTube page. You can also find this on the site, dognation.com. And I think we post this on Facebook by now as well. But he and I and Connor Riley and Jeff Sintel, we got together and we did kind of a mock draft of sorts of if we're going to put the entire Georgia roster and pit it against itself, we're going to pick our teams. You know, we kind of did that. We each drafted 10 players. A lot of the folks on the YouTube comment section had a chance to kind of weigh in with their thoughts there as well. And it was really just kind of a springboard to have a fun Georgia conversation. It was good to get all four of us together on video yesterday. I thought it worked out really well. So you can check that video out on the Dog Nation YouTube page, and some of what I talked to Mike about here now is also going to be in relationship to that, and also some of the interesting preseason prediction stuff that's out there as well. So we'll do a lot of that with Mike Griffith here coming up on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger today. And then after that, I don't love being a see-I-told-you-so guy, but there may be one respect in which I have to be a little see-I-told-you-so today. There is a certain new SEC coach who I have predicted will be an abject failure. And I think you're already starting to see a pretty interesting piece of evidence to suggest that I might be right about that. Being able to handle the attention that comes from being down south in a hotbed for college football like the SEC, I think you're already seeing an example that it's not working out quite so well for a coach that's not quite used to this kind of environment. We'll do that later on. Let me also remind you about my friends the AJC here for a moment. You know, today begins kind of a very, very unusual situation, uncharted territory here with the shelter in place going in effect for the state of Georgia. Go to AJC.com right now and you can read more about exactly what Georgians need to know about this, whether you're listening to us on the radio in Athens or you're gathered around the state listening to the podcast here. As we begin our shelter in place here for Georgia, the AJC's got really good coverage of exactly what's going on with that. You can stay up to date and get your Atlanta news now at AJC.com. And of course, don't forget, we continue to have an open house here for the AJC e-paper. A free presentation of what the AJC e-paper subscribers get each and every day. You can find out more about that by going to the top of the page at dognation.com or checking out ajc.com as well. It is great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. Don't forget to stop by and visit them to get ready for everything, getting ready for Easter for you, your family, your kids, and everything else. And, of course, we appreciate you being with us on the program here today. And now, as promised, a lot of UGA football talk as we say hello to our buddy Mike Griffith from dognation.com. And happy Friday, and thanks for being with us.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
It's good to have Mike Griffith here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger here today. And Mike, you and I were speaking before we officially started the interview. I step outside my house to record just to make sure I get a good cell signal. And here already, kind of the late morning, it's already very sunny, very beautiful. It's one of those funny things where even in the midst of obviously a spring that's way different than we could have ever anticipated, still, I guess, important to make sure you take advantage and opportunity of the little things. You know, we're not out and about too much now, but we can be outside of our house and our yards or whatever, and probably pretty important we take advantage of this weekend, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Georgia's such a beautiful state, BA. You know, I was on the Georgia campus yesterday, and I went to the state botanical gardens, and I just thought, my goodness, how have I not been here before? There's just, you know, Athens has so much beauty, the campus around the University of Georgia. Obviously, we all have our feelings and thoughts about the facilities, and I know we're all eager to get back there, but really feeling blessed to be in Georgia today, there's no doubt.
We had a fun time yesterday, and I hope folks got a chance to see this. It was on the Dog Nation YouTube page live, and I believe it has since sort of migrated on the site and everywhere else. People can get a chance to do this as a way of just getting all of us together, the four of us who mainly show up on the site, you, me, Jeff Sintel, Connor Riley. We did kind of an unofficial draft, so to speak, of if we were going to, you know, pit the Georgia roster against each other or against itself, you know, how will we draft those teams? And I thought the event in itself was just really interesting. Ultimately, the results of it all and who's on whose team probably doesn't matter that much. The strategy used to decide who to pick whom and when to pick when is probably maybe the most important, I guess, part of that. After having a chance to go through the exercise, what did you think about that yesterday, Mike? A fun chance to talk some football, but beyond that, what were your takeaways?
Well, I'll just start off by complimenting you. I mean, you were at your best, and, you know, people don't understand, you know, how these things unfold. We really didn't have much of a plan going in. We didn't really have many stipulations, and, you know, I've done enough video and radio as you have, BA, and when it's good, it's just good. And that thing just unfolded, and it's really a credit to you, your moderation, and the way you pulled that thing together. So I guess I would just start out by pointing out your production. I want to compliment you. People take those things for granted, and I know it takes talent to pull off what you pulled off. So I'll start out with that. But the exercise itself, you know, I thought it was cool for a couple of reasons. One, it gave us an opportunity to put into context the value of different players and how we all value these different players for different reasons. And I think there was some education to that. You know, I learned some things in listening to your point of view or Connor's point of view or Jeff's point of view, or, you know, we all provided some biographical information on the guys we picked and why we picked it, how we thought this person was going to be of value, right down to picking our assistant coaches at the end that were going to oversee our teams, which was kind of the final twist to a really fun exercise. So I thought that there was a lot of value in that. And then I think just for me, it was just the opportunity to just kind of let my hair down. You know, I was on my back porch and we were just talking, man. There was no acting. There was no script. I mean, I just felt like we were as ease with one another on that presentation as we are on our daily phone calls. And that's very hard. That's just not something you can script, and it's not something that just happened, but it actually just happened.
Well, first of all, thanks for the kind words. I think that's all really well said. And in terms of my own draft philosophy, when we did this, one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting is that obviously you want some offensive guys, you want some defensive guys, and sometimes the offensive picks are dictated by positions. You know, for instance, quarterbacks, there's just not a lot of those, so if you got a chance to pick a quarterback, you probably should, maybe running backs kind of the same way. Defensively, you can be a little more, I guess, open to whom you pick and when you pick them, and when it comes to that first pick off this Georgia defense right now, and you and I have talked about this a million times before, but that unit seems so deep. There's so many talented players there, and Kirby rotates so many of those guys as effectively as he does. When you talk about picking your first, second, third defensive player, if you gave 10 people a pick, I'm guessing you're going to get a good number of differences in who gets picked first there.
Yeah, I thought the draft order really kind of, as you said, it really kind of it kind of designates who you pick. Like, you know, for example, I mean, you went with, Jamie Newman. You had the first quarter. It's almost like you had to get that quarterback, and you're right. We all did kind of defer the defense because, as you said, you know, there was you got DJ Daniel so late in the draft. I mean, it just goes to show just how deep that defense is when you can get DJ Daniel. I don't know what was the 7th or 8th round, something crazy like that. You know, here's a future NFL cornerback, right? So yeah. I also thought the value that was placed on the freshman was interesting. I know Jeff was hyper-aggressive on the freshman, although I don't think he'll ever forgive Connor for picking Kendall Milton. That really took the – that's you could just see the air come out of Jeff's tails. He just knew that Kendall Milton was going to fall to him. And when people see the video, they'll see what I'm talking about. But there was a lot of strategy involved. It was almost as if – once Connor got boxed out of the top three quarterbacks, he had to figure out a way to make his team work. And he got pretty creative with some things. And that was another thing that you kind of discovered. You know, hey, a lot of these guys can play other positions, and you don't really stop and think about it until maybe you're the coach in that pinch. And how am I going to make the best use of my personnel? So you're right. There was a lot of strategy involved, and it did speak really well to the depth of that draft and the depth of the team.
Yeah, I guess the point that I'm building to here is I think it's really interesting that if you look at the Georgia defense, you're asking me to say, who is the best player on this unit right now? I don't know that I could, with great confidence, mention one name. I could mention a handful of names and feel pretty good that I've got the best player somewhere in that group. But in terms of best player on this Georgia defense right now, I don't know that I necessarily know who that one individual name is at the moment. And at least before the start of the season, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Richard LeCount was the first player taken in the draft. I won't give too many other spoilers away, but it could have been a lot of guys. I mean, who is the best player? I mean, if you put that out there in a poll to Georgia fans or even SEC coaches, I mean, is it Azeez Ojulari? Is it Monty Rice? Is it Richard LeCount? Is it Tyson Campbell? Is it DJ Daniel? Is it you go on to Trevon Walker? Is it Malik Herring? You know, they. You can't go wrong. It's not like we got past three defensive players and everybody went, well, nobody any good anymore. It was like, no, there's plenty of those guys. And it was really a race to the skill position players, I felt like, particularly a wide receiver. And I'm sorry, I kind of had to take George Pickens. It's funny because we did one just for playfulness, and Pickens was your guy. And, you know, and I was the one that took him. Where you drafted had everything to do with who you picked is one thing that – and I think what we did find out was George Pickens is unquestionably I think he's probably the most valuable offensive player. That's what I – that was my takeaway from our two exercises on this.
Yeah, I would say at least on paper here to start the season. Certainly Pickens kind of has that role. But get back to the defense here for a moment. Mike, do you agree with something that I've said in the past, which is if you want to make a case that right now LeCount is this defensive leader, obviously, and maybe even the unit's best player, I think that's probably true. And, you know, I think that Georgia in the long run will be better off if someone from the front seven emerges as the best player based on results on the field. Now, I don't want to make a sort of overly simplistic point, but if you look at the 4 years that Kirby Smart's been Georgia coach, in 3 of those 4 years, the best player has been a defensive back on the defense. It was Maurice Smith in 16. It was DeAndre Baker in 18. It was probably J.R. Reed last season. And yet the best defense that Georgia has been produced under Kirby Smart, the best results for the team, was in 2017 when a linebacker, Roquan Smith, was this unit's best player. So when I think about those sort of high-end results, getting back to the playoff, winning the SEC, possibly even winning a national championship, seeing someone from the front seven, whether it's Azeez Ojulari or Nolan Smith or N'Kobe Dean or whomever, but seeing someone from that front seven emerge as this group's, if not clear leader, LeCount's going to obviously be a vocal leader, but sort of most statistically dominant player, that to me is the recipe to kind of put the kind of defense together that can go on the road and beat Alabama, that can follow that up with an SEC championship win. Somebody really dominant in the front seven, the way that Kirby always seems to have a really dominant defensive back, that, to me, is the recipe for how you really get over the hump here in 2020.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see that. I think we're going to see some of those names, those household names emerging in the front seven. You know, Nolan Smith and Azeez Ojulari, a couple of the kids, Trevon Walker, right? Malik Herring appears to be on the verge. of standout seasons. Now, the thing about the leadership, the voice, is somewhat dictated by the position. And I think just by the nature of the Mike linebacker, you want to have a great Mike, and that goes hand in hand with being a great leader. And I think, you know, Kirby has really tried to – I feel like he's really tried to help Monty Rice evolve into that role. And I feel like Monty's getting closer and closer. I thought Monty was a guy, Brandon, at the Sugar Bowl that was pretty vocal, that arrived there, that said, hey, we're here to prove that this ain't last year. I thought Monty Rice took a really big step with his Sugar Bowl presence in the absence of all those other players, and showed me some leadership there, vocal leadership, not just how he met with the media, but what he said about all those young players that were waiting for an opportunity to prove how good they were, and doggone it if they didn't go out there and do that against the number 7 ranked team in the country. I know that Georgia rivals are trying to water down that win over Baylor, but let me tell you, beating Baylor, a Baylor team that's looking to set a record and be the most successful Baylor team in school history with a coach that's on the verge of being hired by the NFL is a heck of a lot different than beating Virginia, if you know what I mean. So that was a heck of a win. I don't think that fans should sell that short. I think what Georgia did at the Sugar Bowl was very special and spoke volumes to Kirby turning the page, his ability as a leader. And to your point, the secondary leadership with J.R. Reed gone, Richard LeCount stepped up in the secondary. He was vocal on the field. He was active. I thought Monty stepped up. So those two guys, by the nature of their position, their experience level, they go into next year as three-year starters at key spots. And then those young Lions coming up, Azeez Ojulari, Trevon Walker, Nolan Smith has been vocal in the offseason. You know, you're right. These are the guys that are going to carry Georgia into the future and make it absolutely laughable when I read Kentucky fans talking about beating Georgia anytime in the near future. And I don't know where they came from on Twitter, but putting the Kentucky fans in isolation is apparently led to some craziness in the Bluegrass State, because suddenly they're predicting that Kentucky is going to pass Georgia in the East.
Well, listen, I guess that opinions like that come pretty cheap and easy these days. I mentioned a moment ago going to Tuscaloosa and trying to get a chance to win a game, and BetOnline recently published some odds for some of the games of the year. One of those games that were mentioned was Georgia-Alabama in Tuscaloosa. At the time, BetOnline had the Tide as a 4.5-point favorite. There has been some action taken on that, and that number has now changed. Now, I'll mention that they're not taking huge numbers of bets, nor are they allowing big money bets on this right now. So it doesn't take a lot of action to move these lines, but the line has moved a little bit. It's gone from Alabama minus 4.5, now Alabama minus 7. So, yeah. Mike, what that tells me a little bit is that when it comes to Georgia trying to get over that hump, when it comes to Georgia trying to win that game in Tuscaloosa and finally best the Crimson Tide, there are going to be a lot of skeptics of UGA until the Dogs actually get that done.
Well, there should be. There should be, because Georgia hasn't gotten it done. And if you're not somebody that follows Georgia closely, and if you're looking at Georgia from 10,000 feet, and you're not somebody that's a part of the Dog Nation, and you're not somebody that follows Kirby Smart, and you haven't paid close attention, what you see is this. Kirby can't beat Saban. Saban has not lost to an assistant coach yet. I mean, he's 19-0. So that's a trend, right? The second thing, Georgia just lost Jake Fromm. And Jake was the face of the program. Now, there's people that would argue he should or shouldn't have been, or he good or bad, whatever you think. The bottom line was, when people thought Georgia, they thought Jake Fromm. And it to incredible proportions. He was absolutely the face of the program. So you're looking at a Georgia team that hasn't, for whatever reason, now you and I have sat next to each other at a couple of these games, and we've watched Georgia absolutely outplay Alabama for three quarters. I mean, absolutely out. They absolutely should have won. But in the end, they found a way to stumble. They had a key injury, or Alabama pulled some magic off the bench. And I get it. That's cool. It's a trend. But if you're watching closely, you see this defense. And nobody's talking about this defense, B.A. It's amazing. It's amazing to me. They didn't have any – and I'm never going to let the Associated Press forget this. There was not one Georgia player selected by this AP panel of writers, first-team All-SEC defense last year. Not one. And we're talking about the defense that led the nation in scoring defense, that led the nation in rushing defense, that was number 3 in total defense, and that was number 8 in pass efficiency defense in the country. Top 10 in all 4 categories, led the SEC in rush, total, and scoring defense, and not one Georgia player made first-team All-SEC defense. So That tells you how in the dark the national media is about Georgia. So what we know, they don't know. So let Georgia be the underdog. Kirby wants to keep them hungry. I don't know if you noticed this, VA, and I don't want to take this in another direction too much, but the other day, Kirby Smart was asked to identify. I asked him on a teleconference. I submitted a question. Who are the guys that stood out in the off-season conditioning? And I didn't notice until about 2 hours later when I was reading the transcript that Kirby named all five offensive players and didn't name one defensive player. Now, that tells me the head coach is not going to let that defense get complacent, because you and I both know there's some defensive guys that are looking good in the offseason he ain't talking about.
Sure thing. Sure thing. That's a fun thing to think about for sure, Mike. Hey, we appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger today. Hope you get ready to enjoy a great weekend. Hope you stay healthy as well. And just appreciate the content. Appreciate the fellowship here for a few minutes. We'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
Appreciate all you're doing, BA. You're doing a great job, and all the Georgia fans, including myself. I love watching your programming. It helps me get through the day. So keep up your good work. Thank you.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Always nice to hear some kind words from Mike Griffith there, and I appreciate him being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger here today. Let me also, as we transition to our SEC Through, give a shout-out to my friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia. You know, they can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors, and to best serve you during these unique times, you can connect with Pella through video, chat to talk about your replacement process. You can also schedule a free virtual appointment with a Pella expert to discuss window and door replacement options. Simply go to PellaBranch.com to schedule your virtual appointment. You'll receive an email from your local Pella expert, and you can start the chat. You'll get free, no-pressure consultation with expert advice from a Pella expert who will show you product samples, talk you through all the installation options, and provide a free quote and answer any questions that you might have. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is a family-owned, operated branch right here in our state, which means its local service backed by a national company. And through April 23rd, you can replace all your windows for as low as just $78 per month, or you can get 40% off qualifying installations. Simply log on to the website that I told you about before, PellaBranch.com, or give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom at 404-445-2979. That's 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. So I realize it's a little bit tacky to say, see, I told you so, because obviously I get plenty wrong. But I believe I'm on my way to being proven right on something. I have said in the past that I think that Mike Leach, the new Mississippi State coach, will be an unmitigated failure. I think that Leach is kind of an eccentric character. The media likes that. Leach is also very generous with access. The media loves that. And so, therefore, Leach gets kind of treated as this really important figure, you know, this guy that, you know, college football is just craving for because the media likes Leach. But Leach has also made his name for himself working in remote outposts, places like Lubbock, Texas, places like Pullman, Washington, the kind of place where you can kind of get away with just being weird. Travel a long way from organized society, you'll find more weird people. That's just generally the way those things kind of go. So Leach, as a weird guy, operates well in places that aren't exactly hotbeds of activity. But in the SEC, even in a place like Starkville, Mississippi, which the average person would think of as a small town, it is still under the microscope of the SEC. And despite the fact that there aren't very many people that live in the state of Mississippi by comparison to a place like Atlanta, the people that do live there are huge, huge football fans. They take football really seriously. Starkville may be smaller than other SEC capitals, but it is just as intense for the people who live there. And because of that intensity, because of that microscope, I've just felt like that Leach, who's got some troubled baggage in his past that the media conveniently allows him to sweep under the rug, that somehow, some way, this is just not going to work. Plus, he's just kind of committed to a style of football that ultimately I think is going to fall by the wayside in the SEC as well. So there's already some evidence that I'm on my way to being right about this. Did you see that Leach had to apologize for a recent tweet? Now, I'm going to see if I can explain this. This is one of those challenges when the show's not on video. For the portion of our audience that watches the show on video, I could just show you the tweets here. We could kind of go through this. I have to describe all of this for podcast and radio now because that's the only way that we're even able to have this conversation right now. But nonetheless, so Leach always tweets out these memes. He's like your, you know, Uncle whoever, Uncle Louie or something on Facebook, always sharing these memes. And one of the memes that he shared was something about a wife and a husband. Essentially, the joke is the wife's tired of her husband during the coronavirus shutdown, so she's making, as it said, a scarf, but the picture shows instead of a scarf, it's a noose. She's essentially going to hang her husband.
It's the kind of thing that's, you know, probably not, you know, the most, I guess, egregious, you know, grotesque joke you could put out there. But it's, you know, to some people it wasn't funny. And some of Leach's own players at Mississippi State were even tweeting like some WTF stuff about this. And they even seemed to kind of be bothered by this. And he got some criticism for it as well from some people around the state there. And he had to come back out and say, hey, if you're offended by my joke, I apologize. And so here we go. So what Leach is kind of finding out is the stuff that was funny in Pullman, Washington is not necessarily funny in SEC country. What was funny and worked in Lubbock, Texas doesn't necessarily work down here. This is a benign example, relatively benign anyway. I think there'll be greater examples once the season begins, because you better believe Mississippi State fans not laughing at a joke. If they're not laughing at a joke before the season even begins, imagine how unfunny some of this stuff is going to feel when he starts to rack up some losses. So that's my take. My job is to be clear. I want to be very clear with you on this. I think that Leach is heading for a disappointing conclusion to his time there in Starkville with Mississippi State. A couple of other SEC through news. Some good news for the Bulldogs here, by the way. Recently got a very nice commit to the class of 2021, a quarterback, Sawyer Roberts, and he's out of Lubbock, Texas, speaking of Lubbock. He's also a baseball player as well. Another example of, you know, the baseball prowess at a place like Mississippi State, also helping with some football recruiting here. So Robertson apparently has a pretty good quarterback recruit, wanting to be a part of the Leach program, also wanting to be a baseball player there for what has been a very powerful program in Starkville. Sawyer Robertson has made a commitment to Mississippi State. I saw Alabama linebacker Markel Benton is suspended. At first, I kind of got one of those vibes of, what is it, Chris Tucker from the movie Friday, when he says, how are you going to get fired on your day off? At first, I was looking at Markel Benton here saying, how are you going to get suspended during the coronavirus lockdown? But kind of find out, I guess, his suspension had actually started prior to all of this. He wasn't on the Alabama pre-spring roster, as a for instance. Media kind of got tipped off to it by that. Saban did confirm that yesterday. He's probably a number two linebacker, probably a backup there. But nonetheless, he is suspended and dealing with that at the moment. I can't remember if we dealt with this or not on the show. I think we did this on video. I don't think I mentioned this on the podcast. But LSU coach Ed Orgeron's getting a divorce. No snarky joke for me on this. I hate this for him and his wife. She has always been really present with him on a lot of these post-game interviews and stuff like that. You know, a lot of the SEC wives, we may not really know much about them, see them very much. You know, certain wives a little bit more out in front than others. Orgeron's wife seemingly was on TV with him a pretty good bit. So from that standpoint, I guess maybe a little bit of surprise with all of this, but a sad nonetheless that Orgeron's marriage is potentially over here, especially coming off what has been such a great year for him professionally. You may not be able to pick out Missouri coach Eli Drinkwitz out of a lineup, but he has certainly been in the news a lot over the last couple of days. He initially took a jab at Kirk Herbstreit for Herbstreit's claim a week ago that the season would not be played. Drinkwitz, I believe, correctly said, what does Herbstreit know about this? He needs to stick to picking games. I think that Drinkwitz was right for saying that. However, Drinkwitz has since then thought better of it and decided to apologize. But the one thing I did like from Drinkwitz, though, is he was very clear that he thought his team, if you got him back on campus and practicing again by August 5th, could be ready to begin the season at the beginning of September. And that kind of, I guess, solutions-oriented thinking, that kind of optimistic, make-the-best-of-the-situation thinking, even though Drinkwitz is not a guy I know very well, stemming back from his time at Appalachian State, I like the attitude that he's taking here, that one way or another, we're going to do what we can to get the season going, to get the stuff being played. And I think from that standpoint, that's a really good thing. So nice to see Drinkwitz leading the way on that. Other SEC coaches kind of trying to do their part, too. And listen, one way or another, if the world gets healthier, we're going to need football to help rebuild our society. It's the kind of thing that has magical powers over us all, it seems, and it can unite a community in a way almost nothing else can. So assuming it's safe and healthy to be back in congregation with each other again, we're going to need football. And it's nice to see guys like Drinkwitz doing their part to say, hey, you give me a few weeks, I can get a team out there on the field. That's great to see. And we'll make that your SEC through. Let me also remind you of this for a moment. I'm going to mention a Jake Fromm story here in a minute. Before I do, let me remind you that we are still doing Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger on a video each and every morning, and you can still get involved, if nothing else, commenting with me, chatting back and forth, just a way of kind of keeping a Georgia football conversation going. I love to be able to do it. It's one of the things that really keeps me sane, getting an outlet. You know, I'm not getting a chance to interact with a whole lot of people right now. So to have Dog Nation Daily in podcast form, radio form, video form, in some form or fashion, even if it's not quite the same broadcast we typically do, that's a really nice thing for me. And so for those of you who are tuning into the video and then checking out the podcast to get
the normal content you're accustomed to getting. I really appreciate that. And of course, it also gives us a chance on there each and every day to do our R.S. Andrews cool down. Of course, you know, R.S. Andrews, if you've got an air conditioning issue or a plumbing, electrical issue, you know, if your heater's been on the messed up back during the winter, obviously R.S. Andrews can take care of all of those things for you. Story after story, they've been delivering smiles, and they can deliver a smile for you, but you need to check them out online at rsandrews.com. That's rsandrews.com, and they'll take really good care of you on that front. Let me mention this on the way out the door here today for a moment. So I saw where Dan Orlovsky, the ESPN analyst, was talking about Jake Fromm, and it's been really amazing to me the ways in which Fromm, as a draft prospect, and by the way, the media's talk about this does not necessarily reflect what NFL teams think. We have a tendency to sort of view guys as rising and falling on draft boards. That's not always necessarily the case, but it is kind of interesting to see after a couple of weeks of hearing about Jake Fromm potentially drafted third round, fourth round, you know, not exactly the most favorable outlook for Fromm. We've seen the tide kind of stem back in the other direction as of late, including Orlovsky, who was really quite complimentary of Jake and suggested that he could be like a second-round pick of the New Orleans Saints and maybe the heir apparent to Drew Brees. I'm a little skeptical of this kind of stuff sometimes because I think when analysts get it wrong, one of the main ways they get it wrong is comparing players simply because they look like each other and physically Fromm is of a similar stature to Drew Brees. But nonetheless, it's nice to see Jake getting some love again, even if it's from a guy like Dan Orlovsky. So we'll find out how that goes. As it stands now, the draft is still scheduled to take place come this month. We'll say goodbye to you here and remind you that our Gatorade Updater now stands at 1,252 days. That's how long it's been since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. Happy Friday. Enjoy the weekend. We'll see you Monday. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.